I'm proud to be able to say that my guest on this edition is Heather Small. Heather, welcome to the Mouthcast.
Hey, Steve, how you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good.
Excellent. We're going to be talking about your new orchestral album and your forthcoming UK tour, of course. We'll begin by talking a little bit about M People, but before we do any of that, let's travel back in time, approximately 25 years, in fact, and listen to something by M People. This is a classic single, Moving On Up.
www.themouthmagazine.com
Heather, that was Moving On Up from the M People album Elegant Slumming. I always felt that album was a bit of a lifestyle record in a way. Each era has one or two of those, a record that crosses over from its genre and appeals to a much wider audience. You think back 10 years before Elegant Slumming and there was ABC's Lexicon of Love or Sade's Diamond Life. And then,
well, that's really good company. Thank you.
Yes. And then 10 years afterwards, Dido's Life for Rent. Really ubiquitous records, really. What do you think it was about Elegant Slumming, particularly, that struck such a chord?
It's hard to critique yourself, you know, but I think for me personally, with the band, we'd had been in bands that were almost made it. And that almost hurts. It hurts a lot. And when we got to the point where we were able to write and record songs and have success, you don't breathe a sigh of relief. You feel compelled to push that little bit harder.
Right.
And I think that was what it was about Elegant Slumming. We'd gathered everything that we'd learned to that date from past bands and from anything that we'd done musically or listened to. We brought it to bear on who we were and what we were doing at the time. And we were individual, but also a collective. And it was the three of us trying to make something that we were proud of and that we could work hard on and that we could stand by. It was trying to capture where we were,
yeah,
and what we felt about what we were doing. And that's no easy feat. And also, when you do that, you just have to be really quite honest. You have to be honest with yourself, honest with the others around you and with your intention. And I would not leave the vocal booth or the studio until I thought that I had done the absolute best vocal I could do for that song. And then after I'd done that, I'd still go and listen again to make sure that I had done it to the best of my abilities and that I could stand by it. So that it connected with other people on such a level. It was surprising because it's a really big endorsement. And I was so shy and I was so nervous about my talent. And the only time really I could really show how deeply I felt about what I did was in that vocal booth. And how deeply I felt about anything that happened to me was in that vocal booth. So it meant so much to me. You're looking for perfection.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is the thing, you know, either if you say it or you don't say it, you're striving for it. Doesn't matter whether you acknowledge it to others or not. You know, in your heart of hearts, you're striving for perfection. That's most probably what the thread is with the albums that you mentioned. It's trying to capitalize on where you are and the peak of your powers, bring it all to bear in this one record. You're asking a lot of yourself and of this one endeavor. And at the time, you think it's right to ask yourself all of that and to answer all of that and to make sure that you capture it.
I think the record proves that that's right, because the energy of those records that we mentioned and Elegant Slumming, it's there for all to see.
Yeah, and at the time, you know, when we won the Mercury for it, oh my goodness, people were, there was a certain set of people that were totally and utterly up in arms. And I thought, you know, you've exposed yourselves because what you really thought was that the Mercury should have been an elite prize for a certain type of music and a certain genre of music. And M people didn't sit easy in that. Well, we didn't sit there at all.
Yeah.
We didn't sit there at all in the cool and hip, you know. It's one thing trying to be cool and hip, but I wanted to reach as many people as I possibly could, and not just for it to be commercial in the sense of selling, but in the way that it would touch people.
Soulful.
For my voice and those songs to touch people as much as I possibly could. You know, how dare people then try and rubbish what I've done with true intent because they think it's not hip, they think it's not cool. And I think, you know, you don't have the right to try and lop my head off because I've put it above the parapet. That's a very easy thing for you to do. To critique anything is easy. To make something where there was nothing, that's a lot more difficult. And so early stages, and people suffered that a lot. But I didn't really care because I thought to myself, the people, yeah, I'm not going to play to the people that didn't like me. That's a waste of time, you know. You wouldn't pour all your love onto someone that couldn't stand you. You make sure that the person and the people are worthy of your love. So, you know, they weren't worthy. So I didn't waste my time.
Good for you.
So, and you get an award, but for that initial time when you get the award, oh, you know, you feel great. And maybe that lasts for a few days afterwards. But it's what you do with being given that accolade. It's not the accolade so much. It's how do you move forward and prove that all that investment in you, not just the awards, but people coming and buying your records. That's the award. People coming and buying your records and still 25 years later coming to see me live right now is proof that it wasn't misguided. And, you know, I'll claim it and I'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely. And rightfully so, I would say. I mean, the band were huge for a while. And it's quite remarkable, really, when you look back at that era, that there were the Brit Awards, the Mercury, as you said, The Bizarre Fruit album was in the charts for about 18 months, I think. You were the face of fashion for a while. How was all of that? I know that's what you were aiming for, but how was all of that attention to cope with?
You know, because people talk about it, and sometimes I think to myself, when they talk about me and the part you play in that whole musical history and legacy, everybody has a part, doesn't matter how small, I'll take it. But it's funny because you're living it, you're in it, you do everything to the best of your intention and in endeavors, you work really hard, you're committed, so you don't see a big picture. There's not a big picture like that. There's a series of little pictures that then go to make the big picture, that's montage. And so somebody else is looking at the big picture and I'm looking at the little pieces that I've put together. What I did was I didn't take any notice of critics, good, bad, or indifferent. And to this day, I don't. And so it's, for me, it seems otherworldly, and because that's not how I look at it or how I see it. I just think, you know, I worked really hard. I wanted to be proud of what I'd started, and I wanted to finish it in a way that it would stand the test of time. So every vocal, every song, it really mattered to me. And I think that's why I still to this day I can go on stage and sing those songs, because I care. I care about them. It's not like you save lives, but you know what? It saved my life. And so I treated it with the respect that it deserved from me. You know, like I said, didn't save lives, but it saved mine. And it was something that I wanted to do from childhood. So you don't think to yourself, oh, here I am, you know, making this iconic music, and oh, everybody's going to see me as an icon, and I will. No, not really. You question yourself, am I doing the best I can do? When I hear this intent, what's always in the back of my mind is, when I hear this in years to come, will I be able to still claim it and own it and stand by it? That's always the criteria for me, and when I do anything.
So it's work ethic, and it's also pride in that work, isn't it?
Yeah, in your work. And yes, and not a boastful pride, because, you know, there's people who take pride in me, and I wanted to make them proud, primarily my mother, my sister, for my mother to know, you know, her journey from Barbados at 18, you know, be just out of girlhood herself, to start this life and to face all the things she faced. It was worth it, because here was her daughter realizing her dream, and she gave me the tools to do that, the strength of character and mind. Because what people thought of me, you know, you're very dark skinned, you're working class, you live on a council estate, you know, a lot of people saw this as a negative, and they weren't backwards in coming forwards and telling me. But I took all of those things together and made it into one big positive. And my mother has always endorsed me. So it wasn't like I needed everybody to love me, because I had the love of really good people, two really good people from the beginning. So that was my mother and my sister. So I could go anywhere and fight any battle, because they were always my sword and shield.
Yeah. And I guess, I mean, you're a mother yourself, so I guess you would be able to now look back and see how it was for your mum, and how that pride would really mean something
to
her.
Yeah. And she's quietly proud of me. You know, she's not a boastful woman, and she's quite shy. And I used to be quite shy. But she likes to laugh. She's funny. We have that. My mother, we live together. And, you know, every day is joyous. We have a good laugh. We, like I said, it's that kind of constant endorsement of me that has made me confident. People think that being in a successful band, I mean, and like I said, what's your measure of success?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, no, we sold some records and I made a little change. But there's people who've done that and still totally unhappy.
Yeah.
Confidence has to come from a multiple of experiences and places. But like I said, the one constant, my mother and my sister, and their belief, they never wavered. They always thought I'd make it. Even when I thought to myself, you know what, it's not going to happen, they just look at me and my sister would say, yeah, you got it. I can understand why you feel that way, but especially in my first band, I was signed at 21. I thought, here we go, the world will know my name. And by 24, I was dropped and unsigned and nobody knew my name. You know, to pick yourself up from that. And there's a few key friends that helped me bust myself off. And, you know, that's been where my confidence has come from, because I've had some people that have truly, truly believed what I wanted for myself was what I deserved.
It sounds to me like what you're talking about, really, because obviously the music industry can be quite
cold,
cold and unbalanced. So it sounds to me like what you're talking about is you've got always had a great balance in your life.
Yeah, because I've always had a loving family. My loving family consisted of my mother and my sister. And now, you know, that's grown to our children, and I've got friends who are like family. I don't have lots of friends, but, you know, I'm loyal and loving, and I get that back tenfold. And that makes you stand tall. That makes you feel like you're worth something. And I suppose that's why I can sing songs like Search for the Hero, I'm proud, with such conviction, because these are things that I've lived.
Yeah.
You know, these are my experiences. To continuously sing them, you know, life can be the same battles sometimes have to be fought all the time. And you know, I can go to a place, and because of the shade of my skin, they want to treat me other and less. And that's not something that's dimmed with time. You know, it still burns bright, that kind of bigotry and racism. But, you know, now I've always had the tools to fight them.
Yeah.
But now I have more tools.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, and like I said, and I'm more confident in my endeavor, not just people think, you know, not just because I've sold a few records, but the confidence comes from, you know, I set my mind to doing something and I did it. And whether people think I'm good at it or not, my enjoyment and love of it is always bright, is always vibrant, is always in technicolor. So I think, you know, that's been the success. And, you know, we're talking about the music business. The music business can make a music maker hate what they love to do. And I've never let myself be put in that position. And like I say to you, I don't read any reviews, because I'm not going to let somebody hijack my endeavors. And I will never give anyone, a third party, that kind of power.
Yeah, not let anybody hijack your relationship with what it is that you do.
Exactly, exactly.
Just going to nudge a little bit further back than M People and Hot House, because I always find the answer to this question really interesting. I wondered, where did you first fall in love with music? What was the stuff you grew up with? You know, whether you can remember the first record that you would consider to be yours as a fan.
Well, in my parents' house, we had a stack of records. I can always remember Rocksteady by Aretha Franklin.
Oh, yeah.
And there was just some soul classics. And my sister and I, we'd be late for school because we'd listen to a certain... You know, when you've had the records and you pile them all on the record player,
yeah,
you pile about 10, and they'd have to be played in the order that they were put on. And if they all fell down and number 5 played at number 2, we'd have to start again. So we'd make ourselves late for school listening to music. And, you know, that love of suffering the consequences of being late for school, because, you know, that would not have made my mother happy at all, but it was worth the trouble. And the Jacksons, and here they were the family of singers and musicians, and they were all there together playing. And to this day, like the Bee Gees, you just think, a family that can make music together, get on stage together, and you feel for the one BG that's left, but I think how brave of him, because you know he's going out there and he's still fulfilling his legacy and the foundation he made with his brothers, and that's a tribute to them every single time he gets on stage, and he's able to do that without them. Because you know, the first time I got on stage without the rest of them people, I mean, that was like, oh my good grief, you feel so vulnerable, so exposed. So all his life, boyhood, he has sung with his brothers, and now he has to go out there and continue it. And like I said, the brave is so brave. It's so, you know, and it shows that the endeavor is beyond anything that he might emotionally feel. It's intrinsic to him. And that's how I feel about singing. It's intrinsic to me. And when I haven't sung for a while or I don't get up on stage, I mean, everybody's in for it. The taxi driver, the people at the gym, you know what I mean? All they could hear is singing constantly. You know what I mean? Somebody's like, they'd be like, oh my goodness, get this one on the stage. Get this one on the audience and quick. So, earliest memories is that, you know, listen to music and people that made me feel really quite emotional, made me feel quite emotional. And my sister and I, we used to listen to this music, and we had a ritual. It's like we had these songs, we listened to them in a certain order, and we'd find our corner. I'd be curled up maybe on an armchair, or I'd be on the sofa, and we'd close our eyes and we'd listen to this music. I was always really touched by it, and it was all different types of music. And I say, you know, we first started off and it was reggae, and it was calypso, and it was ABBA,
right?
and it was the Jacksons, and then we progressed on to people that were Luther and Nat King Cole and Nina and Tina and just all these fabulous people. And then I got a bit older, and when I was listening to the Staple Singers, and I was listening to those gospel singers that have this ability through their belief to connect everybody, whether the person listening was a believer or not, they felt the emotion, they felt the intensity of those performers' endeavor and singing that gospel. And if they were believers or not, they were still moved.
Yeah.
And I'm interested in that. I'm interested in how you can move people. And that's usually with an honest vocal and an honest song.
Yeah.
A song that has something to say. And, you know, and even if that song, like, you know, James Brown is about getting up and dancing and throwing yourself into that dance with abandonment. It's that abandonment. It's that wildness. It's that encapsulating everything, putting everything into it, be it love, be it a dance. That's what I'm interested in. And like I said, I thought I heard Gladys Knight, and I thought if I could make one person feel like that. And I had a couple of teachers as well at school. So it was the music. And then I went to a secondary school, and it was hard. I mean, they treated the children of colour quite harshly at the school. But we had two teachers, Miss Levy. She was the classics teacher, Mrs. Douglas. Mrs. Levy and Mrs. Douglas. And Mrs. Levy was a classical teacher, and Mrs. Douglas was the English teacher. And you see, these are themes that are, you know, it's about emotion, it's about words, it's about passion. And they were both very articulate and passionate about their subjects. And I loved them for it. I absolutely loved them for it. They took us to a play, and I've always loved the theatre. And I heard Miss Douglas say, she was at the balcony of the theatre, and she said, you know, if they said to me from the stage to throw myself off this balcony, I would. And I was thinking, my goodness, she's mad. But that intensity and that passion, it struck a chord with me.
Yeah.
And I loved them for it. I loved them for it. That's what the arts are about. That's what being creative is about being. It's about being passionate and loving and honest and open.
Absolutely.
And that's scary. That's scary at any age. But now I feel, yeah, it's scary, but I realize that it's worth it. So whereas I was scared and I still would do it, now I'm scared, but I think it's worth it. So the way I come at it is different. Even, you know, my stage persona is different, obviously, from when I first started, because I trust my judgment and I trust that expression and I trust that I'm in the right place and I'm with the right people. And they will receive it and understand it in the way that I mean it. And it's not like I'm on stage and I'm saying, yeah, look at me, I'm so great. It's like, this is what I love to do. And I hope that you love me doing this and that I make a connection with you.
Yeah. Your new record, your forthcoming record, is likely to reconnect with a lot of people as well, because it's orchestral versions of songs from your back catalogue, I believe, and some new songs as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I've written a few songs. I'm back to writing, and that's been really, really, it's difficult. I find the writing difficult, but it is satisfying. And I've got a new writing partner, Dalian, and it's been a revelation. I've enjoyed it immensely. I've been able to be honest, and he's young, but his influence is current and
classic.
Yeah, and it's such a wonderful combination. And you think to yourself, and you see somebody who's young and who has that same passion and that same love, and you can't help but connect. And that's the thing about anything creative, be it music, dance, theatre, you find like-minded people, you find kindred spirits. And when I was in M People, that's what I had. And it makes you brave.
Yeah.
It makes you brave, and it makes you take chances. And that's what I found with this new writing partner. It's made me brave and it's made me open. And when you feel like that and you think to yourself, you've been in the business for so long and you are now 53, you know, that's exciting. You think life is worth living and it's not about bank balance.
Yeah, so, that's a good place to be, I think.
yeah, it's fun. It's fun. And I would never be in a position whereby I'd let anyone have the power to make me hate what I love to do and something that I've wanted to do all my life for as long as I can remember. So, you know, if I wanted to step out of M People and do something different, that's my prerogative, that's my right. And if people didn't understand that, that's not my problem.
Well, with absolutely no pun intended, and many, many thanks for our chat today. I expect, Heather, this new record is a record you're very proud of.
You made me giggle.
I look into the window of my mind. Reflections of the fears I know I've left behind. I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascend. I'm on my way, can't stop me now, and you can do the same, yeah. What have you done today to make you feel proud? It's never too late to try. What have you done today to make you feel proud? Mm-hmm. You could be so many.
www.themouthmagazine.com